Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Interesting question I want to bring up today. I'm going to start out by talking a little bit about TV. And the question is going to be related to TV. ESPN this week, SportsCenter, is leading into WrestleMania, 500, whatever it is, 32. And Jonathan Coachman, who used to work for the WWE, has been a SportsCenter anchor and also radio talk host for the last few years with ESPN. But he still has great connections with the McMahon family and WWE and so forth. This week, they are running on there updates leading up to WrestleMania on SportsCenter. As a sports fan, do you think, or is it interesting to you, they have WWE stuff on SportsCenter? Should the WWE be on SportsCenter? I'm just asking. Because this will be one of the big deal moments for them this week besides the Final Four. What do you think, Sean?
Well, the E in ESPN stands for entertainment. They're definitely going in that route. And, I mean, for sure, now SportsCenter is almost on every hour of the day, so maybe I'm using an old newspaper term. You know, we got news hole to fill. They need more. Yeah, you know, they're trying to get to an older, you know, they're trying to target to a younger demographic, and I guess they think, well, WWE, a lot of those fans are also sports fans, and we can target that audience. Maybe they can start watching SportsCenter more.
Yeah, I'm just asking the question. I'm not making any comment about it one way or the other. I think it's up to the fans to tell me what they think. At 800-795-9565. That's 800-795-9565. What is interesting is that we had in television, the highest ratings you'll ever see in television, by the way, are going to be the ratings that happened in the 50s, 60s, and into the 70s. It wasn't until you started having the splintering with cable that ratings really fell off. The highest rated college basketball game ever in terms of the rating number was Michigan State and Indiana State. That was 1979. The highest rated college football game ever is Penn State and Miami in the Fiesta Bowl in January 2nd of 87. But what's interesting in the ratings trends is that you saw ratings slowly go down, because there's more splintering, there's more programming, more stations. But in the last 5 or 6 years, especially the last 2 or 3 years, you've actually seen the ratings start to trend back up again. This year has not been that year. The college football playoff, for example, fell off 40%. Everyone kept saying, look, don't have the games on New Year's Eve. Don't have the games on New Year's Eve. Don't have the games on New Year's Eve. And what do? They play the games on New Year's Eve, and they're being very stubborn about it. We're going to create a new tradition. Okay. Everything went down. Super Bowl is pretty steady. It'll be one of the top five rated Super Bowls of all time. So that part's steady. The NCAA men's basketball tournament has gone down. The highest rated game for the weekend was the CBS game, Villanova-Kansas, down from last year, but up from 2014. So it's really in that mid-range. It was like a 5.1. All right, well, that works. That's fine. You have not seen any stories on the NCAA Wrestling Championship. I mean, didn't take them long in the last couple of years to get out that record rating story, did it? That's because this year there weren't record ratings. NCAA Wrestling Championships plunged 10%. Not good. Because when you're plunging 10%, you didn't have a ton to begin with. You're not doing that great. Now let's go to women's basketball. They've been talking a lot about UConn and whether or not they're good for the game. Okay. That's fine. The topic to talk about. But they've also included in all the stories that, oh, by the way, the NCAA women's tournament's up 26%. But do you know what it's up 26% to, Sean?
No idea.
$320,000. The NCAA Wrestling Championship, for example, is more than two times that number. The problem with the NCAA Wrestling Championship is not that just that the drop happened in ratings and the drop happened in viewership. Here's the biggest problem I saw with it. Do you realize the NCAA Wrestling Championship was the 16th highest rated program in sports for the day? Not the week, not the month. They were the 16th highest rated program for the day in sports. And they were in prime time. So we've seen a slight drop in, let's see, wrestling down 9 to 10%. College football playoff went down 30 to 40%. We've seen about a 10 to 14% drop in college basketball in the tournament. Women's basketball's up, but it's up to 320,000. Which is less than half of what the wrestling rating was. Which now brings us back to the WrestleMania thing. They're expecting 70 to 90,000 people at this thing on Sunday night, right? That sounds right. It's at Jerry World. And they want to do programming leading up to it, and then they're going to do something when it's over with.
I even heard last night that USA Network, that runs the wrestling shows during the week, for the first time ever, they're going to do a two-hour pre-show from 6 until 8 on Sunday night before the pay-per-view starts.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. This is,
yeah, USA Network. They run Raw Monday nights and SmackDown on Thursday nights. So I guess they figured, yeah, we'll just put it on the same channel and get people hyped up for the big event.
Well, they carry it, so it's no big deal.
Sure.
I mean, they carry it.
Yeah,
I mean, they carry the darn thing. So it's part of their contract.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be for years and years, it'd just be a standalone Sunday night pay per view event, and now they just want to maximize the coverage since they have all those avenues to go to. Plus, they have that WWE network that they've been hustling for the past couple of years, too.
There is one?
There is a WWE network. Yeah, it's like a $9.95 a month membership.
Hmm.
So if you were to...
For $9.95, I can go out and get a cart and play golf.
So if you were to start your subscription to WWE Network today, you get your first month free. So in essence, you would get WrestleMania for free this Sunday night. But they want to try to lock you into a full year, which of course you'd be spending more money on a full year than on one pay-per-view event. That alone can set you back. Yeah, that alone can set you back $50-$60 for just watching one pay-per-view of WWE.
Wow.
So a lot of the smart TVs have that WWE Network app built in. So you subscribe to the network and you can watch any. They probably have all 31 WrestleManias in the archive. Probably watch all the Andre the Giant you ever wanted to watch.
Wow.
Yeah, they just started that about a year or two ago.
Okay. Wow.
It's been interesting how they've been promoting their pay-per-views over the past year. They've been running it, hey, you can watch it free on the WWE Network. Get your subscription now, first month free.
Wow. Okay. We'll take a break. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. As we roll through here. Okay. Great to have you with us. Love to hear from you. As, our number 800-795-9565 is the number. I mean, is this what they should be doing? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they... I don't know. I realize they're trying to get to a different... audience here. I mean, I understand that. But it certainly is interesting the direction they're trying to go in. They're acting desperate in some ways. Now maybe they should be acting desperate. I don't know. Maybe they should be. It's because there have been so many people have cut the cord. That's an issue. The Phillies are playing with the Yankees today, right?
Yeah, last I checked, there was a light. They delayed the game because of lightning a little while ago.
I hate when that happens.
I do, too.
Hate when that happens. Yeah. They were losing 4-1, I think, the last I saw.
Yeah, lightning delay about 20 minutes ago.
Okay. All right.
I posted the question on Twitter as well, Steve. Steve Jones, PSU. Follow the show on Twitter. Should the WWE get all this live coverage and publicity on ESPN? Get back to our timeline here.
Yeah, put that on there. And
we will.
See what we got. We're going to have Greg Piccolon from PennLive.com to talk about everything that's going on with Penn State football, a little bit on recruiting and so forth. So we're going to do all that and much more with him coming up. Looking forward to that. So that'll be good. And we'll get up to date, you know, with a couple guys that along the way. Obviously, there's going to be some younger players you're going to see in the blue-white game coming up in 2 weeks. Andre Robinson is one. Robinson's down 7 pounds. Looks a little quicker to me. He's got some real jump in his step. And they're really at three running backs right now with Saquon Barkley, who's been tremendous, Robinson, and then Mark Allen. As you know, they took Nick Scott, they moved him over to corner, and he's been pretty good at corner. He's been fine. He's still learning the spot over there. You've got a kid like Kevin Givens. A lot of people have talked about him. And that's been important because Givens had the frame to put some weight on. Curtis Cothran has the frame to put some weight on as well. Did. But I'll tell you what Curtis Cothran has to get used to is he has to get used to playing low. If you're going to play defensive tackle, you got to play low. You have to get leverage. Your pad level has to be lower than the other guys. And it's, I mean, that's really what it comes down to is that. You've got to be able to get your pad level. And that's where Curtis Cothran's had a tendency sometimes to, like, you know, stand up a little bit. And I think that he's going to have to get used to playing that spot. At some point, you will. And then Robert Windsor's another guy, and a lot of people have not talked about. Windsor, those. Plays a little bit of attitude out there, learning just a bit, but he's another guy at that defensive tackle spot. I think at end there are okay. Between Torrence Proud, Evan Schwann, Garrett Sickles, and Sharif Miller, I think they're okay at defensive end. I don't see any issue there at all. Okay. Take a break. News bottom of the hour. Greg Pickle from PennLive.com. Next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for this day in sports history, which includes on this day, we were talking about WrestleMania earlier, the day that Hulk Hogan beat Andre the Giant in 1983. 11 minutes and 43 seconds to pin Andre the Giant, 93,000 on hand at the Pontiac Silverdome. So,
actually, a buddy of mine from college, who now lives in Las Vegas, he was at that event in Detroit. Saw it in person.
Was.
Yeah, saw it in person.
How about that?
Yeah.
1970, Tony Esposito recorded his 15th shutout. It was an NHL record for a rookie goaltender in the modern era. 1998, Tennessee won the women's basketball championship over Louisiana Tech. Tennessee had set a record with regular season wins. They went 39-0, since bested by Baylor, which went 40-0. Let's see. And the NHL in 2004 approved the sale of the Atlanta Thrashers to Time Warner. Well, that didn't work out either. Eventually, they moved to Winnipeg. And the reincarnation of the Winnipeg Jets. So there you go. You're up to date on everything. Okay. Let's bring in Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and also from Patriot News and get Greg on board here and talk with him about what's going on.
The media, by the way, is going to get an opportunity to seize practice, talk to James Franklin tomorrow. What have been your impressions of what you know so far?
Yeah, I mean, we saw him once for the first time last week. Didn't see a whole heck of a lot, but obviously the talking points coming out of that were pretty clear across the board. It's a fast offense. You know, there's some veteran guys like Brandon Bell and Naeem Wortman who we knew were going to have sort of an easy spring, have an easy spring at least at the start. I mean, there's no real reason to get those guys out there doing too much. They know the scheme. They know what's going on. Obviously, Wortman's rehabbing still, so that made a lot of sense. But, you know, the biggest takeaway for a lot of people, I think, was just how quickly the offense of Joe Moorhead's going to move. And was it probably overstated coming out of that? Yeah, of course. You know, obviously they're not going to move as quickly as they did during that brief portion of a team drill that we saw, you know, in every single game of every, you know, series this season. But it's a quick offense. There's no question. I think that was probably the thing that struck most people that after that opportunity to see things last week.
Of the younger players that we have not had a chance to see yet in a game, have you had a chance to glance at some of those guys? And if so, what has stuck out to you?
Truthfully, not really. But, I mean, Kevin Gibbons, and I just can't really grasp the idea of him being a defensive tackle. I watched that kid 2 years ago when he was out to his field as a junior, and he was pretty thin, pretty skinny kid, and he played. In a game I saw, it was against Gateway. He played running back, linebacker, a little bit of defensive line. Then he lined up in the slot once. He punted. I mean, he did absolutely everything. And then, you know, you see him at the winter conditioning opportunity that the media had a couple weeks back, and I said, is that Kevin Gibbons? And someone said, yeah, it is. And, you know, he just looks so thick now, and he looks like he's ready to go inside. So that transformation has really just completely blown me away. And, of course, the other guy is Ryan Bates. When he flipped to the offensive side of the ball, that kid just looks like a mauler. He looked like that in high school. But he's definitely bigger now, a little bit more defined than he was in high school, which you would expect. And it's the kind of transformation you'd hope would happen if you think that's a kid that's going to play on the offensive line and potentially as a starter this year. So I've been really impressed with him. I think he's come along maybe a little bit quicker than some thought he would. You know, this is a kid in high school that sort of bounced around because, you know, he could do a little bit of everything for Archbishop Wood from a technique standpoint. But as we've heard James Franklin say, he wasn't quite ready size-wise last year, or at least not as ready as they wanted him to be. But I don't think there's going to be any question about that this year.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about him, but he has that frame that, you know, you can look at a frame and say to yourself, okay, he's got the frame that can handle it. It looks like he has a frame that can handle the weight.
Oh, he does. I mean, absolutely. I mean, when you see him at first, you know, I first saw him when he was a junior Archbishop Wood, you just sort of notice sort of how he's built and how kind of wide he is, if that makes sense. And obviously there was going to be, you know, when a kid sort of has that base, there's going to be room to put weight on him, but it had to be good weight. You know, it's not that he was fat in high school, but he was definitely not as muscular as he could have been. And most high school kids aren't. They're just not ready to sort of build their bodies like that. And quite honestly, they don't have the nutritional and strength conditioning resources that, of course, you do at a Division I program. So there was no question that him and Jay Cooper as well, his teammate Archbishop Wood, that's now a linebacker, I thought he looked better this spring as well in terms of the size department and sort of filling out for what you want from a guy that is probably a middle linebacker at this level. So I thought both of those kids really took a step forward. They obviously were advanced for their age when they were at Archbishop Wood, but now that they're at Penn State, I think both have done a nice job in that department as well.
Did you get any kind of look at Andre Robinson? Because he's obviously a running back that redshirted last year. We know what Saquon Barkley can do. What'd you think of him if you had a glance?
I was impressed. You know, he had a couple nice runs where holes got blown open and he just took off. I thought he looked quicker than he did when he was at Bishop McDevitt. That was one of the things. I remember talking to him in June before he went up there. I'm sorry, it was May, I guess, before he went up to Penn State in June a year ago. And one of the things that really bothered him was that people said he wasn't fast, and he felt he was. And for the high school level, he was, but I'm not convinced he was for the college level at that point in time. But he sure looked it this past spring, or I'm sorry, this past practice, this spring, rather, when we were able to see him. You know, he looked a lot quicker. He looked like, you know, he still had the legs that defined him. That kid had, you know, some monster thighs when he was in high school, and that really allowed him to, as, you know, James Franklin talked about a couple weeks ago now, to run through tacklers. You know, he didn't necessarily have to run kids over or run away from them. He just ran through them. He just powered through them with his lower body, and he looked a lot more balanced, if you will. He certainly hasn't regressed any in the lower part of his body. He just has gained more upper muscle mass, or at least that's what it looked like with pads on, and that's only going to help him. I think he's definitely a guy that has a role in this offense, whether it's as a guy that runs out of tackles or as a guy they use out of the backfield. I was impressed. I'll be interested to see if we get another glimpse of him tomorrow.
Last weekend in particular was a big recruiting weekend. Seems like we're always saying that. What kind of feedback did you get from the young men that decided to come over and watch Penn State practice?
Yeah, there were about a dozen there. I haven't been able to track too many of them down yet, but one guy you get to talk to was C.J. Thorpe, who a lot of listeners are probably familiar with now because Penn State's recruited him for so long. He's a kid out of Pittsburgh Central Catholic. Penn State's currently last good chance to get a stud out of there because the other two went to Notre Dame. At least at this point in time, they're verbally committed there. And he had a good time, you know, and he had a nice opportunity to chat with Matt Limegrover and sort of get the lay of the land. And his parents came along and they got to meet him and sit down with James Franklin. So that was good. But, you know, again, Steve, one of the things Penn State's facing right now is that to get that opportunity, I mean, you can do it over the phone and that's all fine and well, mm-hmm, but right. A lot of parents and a lot of kids want to sit down and have a face-to-face conversation, and you have to get to campus to do that. So one of the things Penn State's dealing with is before kids even think about committing, they have to get to campus and sort of have these sit-downs, and some of those kids aren't just going to be able to get there, you know, on the spur of the moment. They're going to have to wait till the summer or maybe even the fall for the official visit. So when you look at this class and say, well, Penn State had, you know, more kids committed at this point in time last year and the year before, they did. There's no denying that. It's factual. But they also didn't have to have kids come to campus to meet a whole new coaching staff in such a short period of time before they considered committing.
Exactly. I mean, that's all part of it. And every cycle is a little bit different as to how you're, you know, because the kids are different. I mean, as to how quickly you're able to get people in and how quickly you're able to sit down and talk with them. Have you had any real sense on the kind of recruiters Tim Banks, Matt Limegrover, and Joe Moorhead happen to be since they've been added to the mix?
You know, not really. I think we'll learn more about those guys after the Blue White game when they're able to go out on the road and sort of go to high schools. You know, I think it's been underplayed, and that's because people don't care, quite honestly, but because it's not that really an interesting thing to talk about. But I think the fact that, and this came out of the Steve Godfrey story for SB Nation, the profile of Penn State that closed the class of 2016, was that because their clearances didn't clear in time, you know, Tim Banks and Matt Limegrover had to go, you know, recruit with other coaches. Now, other schools had this issue. Pitt did it with their new offensive coordinator, so, you know, they were hamstrung by it as well. But that's a pretty serious time commitment to have two coaches have to go to the same place, or if a coach A needs to see a kid here and coach B has no interest in that kid, they need to see a kid over in another city. You know, that's a time suck for both of those guys. So that surely didn't help matters, and you know, it sort of limited where those guys could get to as opposed to they could go out on their own. So I think we'll learn more about what kind of recruiters these guys are once they're able to get out on the road on their own and sort of see more kids and get more feedback. But, you know, for the time being, you know, I haven't heard anything negative about any of those guys as it relates to, you know, how they go out about and do their business on the recruiting trail.
Hey, great. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Steve. We'll see you soon.
Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The cure for March sadness is Ford Truck Month. Sunbury Motors Ford has your truck. So avoid March sadness and don't miss these Truck Month deals. Choose from over 100 new F-150s with savings over 10 grand. F-150s start as low as $25,219. The Ford F-150 has been the number one selling truck 39 consecutive years.
There's one sold every 42 seconds.
Pick from over 65 new 2016 Ford Escapes and take 37 $750 off, and they start from just $20,490. Get 0% financing for up to 60 months on all 2016 Escapes, Explorers, and Expeditions, and 2015 Edges and F-150s during SMC's March Truck Sale. Sunbury Motors is also the area's premier commercial truck center, stocking Super Duties like chassis cabs, crew cabs, dualies, and diesels. Avoid March sadness. Come get your truck at Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. As we roll to the top of the hour and then news, of course, so we'll have some Phillies baseball for you the next couple of weeks. I think we're going to have, except for the Phillies home opener, I think we're going to have probably partial shows on a couple of other days. The Phillies home opener, though, is right at 3:10, I think, right? Something like that. And so...
And first game of the season, Monday at Cincinnati, a 4:10 first pitch. Pre-game starts.
Yeah, I was going to say, but that's a partial, though.
Right, yep.
But I think the Phillies then play on a Monday at their home opener. And I think that's a 3:10 start. I want to say it's on the 11th. So, you know, it's the final week. It's the final week. So we're, you know, it's that time.
So a little earlier, Steve, we posted on our Twitter and our Facebook, should the WWE get all this live coverage and publicity on ESPN?
Right.
Joe, the Joe Hansen on Twitter, says, why not? It's the quote-unquote entertainment and sports programming network. It's also a network that airs poker most nights in the summer. That's true. ESPN runs World Series of Poker. Also, Danny Scott replied, yes and no, depends on how they report it. Don't report it as fluff. Like they have been doing.
But isn't it fluff? Isn't it fluff? It's not, I mean, it's not really sports. It's athletics, but it's not sports. Yeah. I mean, I don't know who's going to win Oklahoma-Villanova coming up. Now, you, the fan, don't know, but neither Oklahoma nor Villanova knows who's going to win their game until the game's over with on Saturday night. As opposed to the competitors in the WWE who know ahead of time who's going to win.
And I have Tom on the line, formerly of State College. He's actually a former student of yours, Steve, and he currently works for the WWE.
Okay.
Steve, how you doing?
Great. How you doing today, Tom?
I think it's
an interesting question.
Well, I kind of want to get your take, considering you and I had some good times with the State College Spikes once upon a time, and I took your class. You probably, or you may not remember the last name Hannafin. That might ring a better bell.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm going by Tom Phillips now in WWE. I'll be heading to Dallas shortly, and I saw your tweet, and I was pretty interested in it, so I wanted to get your personal take.
I think it's fine that they want to do it as long as they, you know, I don't think anybody has any pretenses as to what the WWE is. I also think it's for the younger demographic, 18 to 49, which is what they're trying to reach. I don't see, first of all, let's start with this. Is there any harm in it? No.
No,
not,
absolutely not.
Not in the least. None. Does it appeal to the 18 to 49 graphic? Yes. Is that where they feel like they're losing out right now? Yes. And they're not dedicating the entire sports center to it, but they're doing a part of it to a segment of the audience that likes it. So, to me, no harm, no foul.
Well, I disagree with the argument that it's fluff, because it's one of the biggest worldwide events today in sports or entertainment. And I heard what you said before, that it's you'd refer to it more as athletics than you would sports. And we could bring up the debate about, you know, NASCAR. You could bring up the debate about the spelling bee and fishing that all go on to ESPN. But
me calling it athletics was a compliment to their athleticism as they
and
do
it
this.
Is.
That was meant to be a compliment.
I understand that. I appreciate that.
As for the sport part of it, for example, Villanova and Oklahoma won't know the winner in each locker room until the game's over. If you see my point.
I do see your point. I see your point. I think it's something that people have changed their thinking on over the last decade.
I think they've accepted it.
it's changed completely. And like I said, you know, with the WWE Network, it's seen in close to 200 countries around the world. It's a phenomenon. I can tell you from personal experience, I meet people every year at WrestleMania that this is their vacation. They take a week off from whatever country around the world they come from, and they go to WrestleMania, and it's part of their life, their family, and everything. And I think ESPN and WWE is a partnership that's it's only just beginning. And I think getting athletes the caliber of Brock Lesnar, I think nobody in a room would doubt what kind of athlete Brock Lesnar is, nor a Triple H or any of the athletes they put on there. It makes sense, and I've seen a couple of the tweets, and that it is sports and entertainment. Whether you look at WWE or ESPN, I think it fits perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been something I've talked about in the last year was I'm wondering about the day when ESPN, I don't know, late night, even maybe a prime time, depending on what it is, where they start actually airing some of it. Now, I realize mm-hmm. you have a contractual obligation to your own network and to USA right now. So that would not be fair for you to comment on that. What kind of crowd are you expecting at Jerry World? Because obviously, for an event like this, they probably can put in 110,000, 120,000 if possible. Because the squared circle is only so big.
You'll have to wait and see how big the set is. That's usually part of it.
Tremendous.
The set can be tremendous. I remember being at the Superdome for WrestleMania 30 2 years ago, and they said there had never been more weight suspended from that ceiling than when they did WrestleMania, and the set was absolutely enormous. So the ring actually is dwarfed by the set and everything, and it's often this huge reveal to see what it's all about. So I can't wait to see it. I've heard nothing of the sort, so that's way above me, but I just can't wait to see what it's all like. But to your point, the amount of money that it brings in for the area and the amount of people that it's going to bring into Dallas, it's going to be amazing. And I think the number of people that will attend the event will actually be far smaller than the people that just come to Dallas for all the events that are going on as of today.
Is there like a fan fest that goes with this?
Absolutely. Tomorrow afternoon we start WrestleMania Access. We've got all the different aspects of WWE past and present available. I broadcast for NXT on the WWE Network, and NXT will have a very strong presence at WrestleMania Access throughout the week and everything. So there's a lot going on, Steve. I invite you to come out.
How did you get into this, Tommy?
Well, you remember when I was working for the Spikes with you, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I did that one summer, and then afterwards I started working for Juniata College. I think Steve Williams and the like.
Yes.
And Steve connected me with Pete LaFrance down at the time with Juniata. So I was working with Juniata for the better part of a year and doing men's and women's basketball and football, and then found out through the grapevine that WWE was looking for people. And I think when you hear that at first, you're kind of, how is this an availability? It doesn't quite seem like something they'd advertise, but it was out there, and I applied, and it worked out.
Fascinating. Hey, have a great time with it this weekend. No offense, but Jack Ham and I are going to go to a football scrimmage on Saturday. So
that sounds like a lot of fun, Steve. You take care.
Tom, thanks a lot for the input. That was tremendous, and good luck with this.
Thank you. Take care.
Notice Tom Phillips, when I had him in class, Tom Hannafin. Wasn't that great? That was really great, wasn't it? That doggone Twitter thing works. More coming up next hour. Looking forward to it here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.